Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
And welcome into another edition of the Battleground State Report. As always, go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook as well. You'll find links to some of the stories that we're chatting about. And another huge week, Michael, as we got more news than we can cover in an hour. We're going to get right into it as quickly as we can. Of course, the Battleground State Report is focused on those news items that particularly have an impact in the battleground states, the 17 or so states that will dictate who's in the White House, who controls the Senate, who controls the Congress. You know, it doesn't matter much what happens in California or New York. Nope. They're going to vote blue. Doesn't matter much what happens in Tennessee and Mississippi and Alabama. They're going to vote red. But in places like Ohio and Michigan and Minnesota and Colorado and Nevada and Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, what happens there will determine who's in the White House. And some good news for the president this week.
Yeah.
Popping up to 53% approval in the Rasmussen Report's polling. And by comparison, Barack Hussein Obama was 7 points lower at this exact point in his first term than President Trump. This is part of what I think is causing the liberals' heads to explode.
Exactly. And by the way, so we have a 2020 election coming up for president. Steve, it seems like there's always a presidential election. You know, it's not every 4 years. It's like a constant. The day the 2016 election ended, the 2020 election started, and we've seen that, and now we're about a year and a half away from it, and it's in full play. And so far, the Electoral College is still in place, put in place by the Constitution when it was ratified back in 1789, despite the efforts of the far-left liberals to persuade some state legislatures to go along with a national popular vote. That effort is still out there. You've got Colorado and New Mexico, the only battleground states where the narrowly controlled by the Democrats state legislatures and the Democrat governors have signed laws that would allocate, unconstitutionally, I would argue, the Electoral College votes of those two battleground states to whoever wins the national popular vote, if they've got, you know, a total of 270 Electoral College votes from states that are part of that compact. Turns out, you know, in Ohio, they were going to propose this as a constitutional amendment to the state constitution. They mysteriously withdrew that proposal this week, and we think it's because they know it's not going to work in states that are – maybe it's a battleground state, but certainly leads red. Now, back to the – so the Electoral College, at least for 2020, will be in place, which means, as you said, 13 states are going to be blue, California, New York, that crowd. 20 states are going to be red for the Republicans. You know, Tennessee is one of those states that's going to be red. And there are 17 battleground states. We can go through them here in a second, as we always do. Nevada, Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico in the west, Florida, North Carolina, Virginia in the south. New England has Maine and New Hampshire, and then mid-Atlantic to Midwest, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri. But, Steve, things have been moving. And so it looks like there are three or four of the most battlegroundy states out there that are really going to be the ones in contention. And it looks like it's Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Interestingly enough, President Trump's going to be in Minnesota on Monday.
You know, again, you're seeing him, you know, show up in Ohio. You're seeing him show up in these battleground states. They clearly are trying to move the dial where it will matter when you look at the Trump campaign. And again, the national polling, Rasmussen showing him with a 53% approval. That's great national numbers, but when you look state by state, that's what's really going to matter, and that's why he's going into these states, hammering his message, making sure that people understand the distinction between what the Democrats are doing, you know, wanting to kill unborn babies, wanting to kill born babies, wanting to allow the continued flood of illegals into our country. Everything the Democrats are doing, I think, is undercutting their chances in the battleground states.
Yep.
Again, it may be winning, you know, friends and influencing people in the Soros camps in California and New York and a few other locations. But I don't feel like it's playing in these battleground states.
Well, and President Trump was in Michigan last week. Now, Bernie Sanders. Can you do it better than I do? What Bernie?
Bernie. Bernie talks with the – he's always angry. Bernie's always angry.
He's a millionaire, by the way. Did you know that?
Yeah, because he's a socialist like most socialists who believe that we want to give the little people nothing but make sure that we take care of ourselves and our friends.
Exactly. Well, Bernie is actually going on a Midwest tour. He's hitting Michigan and Pennsylvania and Ohio, I think, are the three states he's going after. So he's going to do – he saw what Hillary Clinton failed to do in 2016. You know, she did not show up in Wisconsin from the time between the primary and the general election. And, you know, Wisconsin went to President Trump by about, I don't know, 15, 20,000 votes. If she had showed up.
The problem for Hillary and the problem for Bernie is that, Hillary didn't go to Wisconsin and she lost it by about 15,000 votes. If she had gone there and they'd actually gotten a better view of who she is and how she is, she might have lost it by 40 or 50,000
I knew that was coming.
That's the problem with Bernie. The downside for the Democrats is they cannot campaign in places and not let people get to know them, and they may not do well. Or they can campaign there and do worse as people get to know them and hear what they're really for and kind of hone in and focus their attention on what they actually say.
It's clear what they want to do. They want to motivate the indigenous lefties in the state. That's what they're trying to do. But by motivating the indigenous lefties, they kind of get the moderates irritated. And that is probably going to have – could have, as you say, a negative effect when they show up.
And it certainly mobilizes the independents and the conservatives against them. I mean, you look at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about it last week. You had a Supreme Court justice campaign 2 years ago. Democrats won by 12 points.
Yeah.
They thought they had a chance to pick up another seat on the Supreme Court. This time they lost. So
they lost.
A 12-point swing as people got a chance to see what Democrats are about.
And the liberal has conceded. That's the new news this week.
We're going to talk more about it. Mitch McConnell warning Republican Senate candidates, you might want to run away from President Trump. How did that work out for the candidates last time who ran away from the president and did not keep their seats or get their seats in the U.S. Senate? We'll talk about that in a moment. This is the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, and we'll be right back.
This is the Battleground State Report.
And welcome in. This is the Battleground State Report. As always, go to battlegroundstatenews.com, battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook, and we'll keep you up to date on the news as it breaks throughout the course of the week and, of course, talk about it each weekend right here. When you look at the campaign cycle coming up, you've got a lot of Republican U.S. senators who are facing re-election. You've had some that have decided not to seek re-election. Kansas, for example, Pat Roberts has decided not to seek re-election.
He's like almost 100 years old.
At least. Although Bernie Sanders calls him young whippersnapper.
but Bernie! Bernie!
So you have this race there, and Republicans are concerned that you had Kris Kobach, who was the attorney general, who ran and narrowly lost the governor's race because the rhinos, the liberal Republicans, the moderate Republicans in the state, wouldn't back the conservative nominee and therefore handed the governor's office in Kansas off to the Democrats. There's concern that if Kris Kobach runs for the U.S. Senate, as he's planning to do, that they're afraid the same thing will happen, that the conservatives will support him, but the moderates in Kansas won't, and they'll vote or they'll stay home and elect a Democrat. I don't think they're going to stay home. I don't have a real fear that conservatives aren't going to turn out, particularly the Trump voters aren't going to turn out in big numbers. The challenge is always that moderate Republicans, rhino Republicans, always expect the conservative base to vote for them after they win a primary. And yet, at the same time, when a conservative wins the primary, it's the Republican rhinos and the moderates that do not show up because they'd rather see a Democrat win than a conservative Republican. It is a key factor that we see in races all the time. But in Kansas, Kobach may end up being appointed by President Trump to a senior position in Homeland Security and remove him as a candidate for the Senate. And the Kansan moderates would be happy with whoever would emerge there. But when you have the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, telling Republicans to run away from Trump, he's clearly not focused on what happened in the last election.
Yeah.
McSally out in Arizona, ran away from President Trump and polled, I don't know, 50, 60, 100,000 votes less than the Republican who won the governor's office, who literally sidled right up to Trump, was hip to hip with him, and won. You look at Florida, DeSantis ran right there with Trump. He won. Now he's got 60% plus approval ratings in Florida. Those who ran with Trump did better than those who ran away from Trump. And so what's Mitch McConnell thinking?
He's thinking in his way. He wants to still be majority leader. That's his calculation. In Kansas, it was very interesting because Chris Kobach, a very smart guy, a real leader on the immigration border security battle. You know, he was abandoned by the Republican Party after he won the primary. Narrowly won the primary, but they abandoned him, and that's why he lost the governor's race by a couple points. Kansas is a very different place. Back in 2014, our friend Milton Wolf, a Tea Party guy, Dr. Milton Wolf, ran, almost won the primary against Pat Roberts. It was like 47-41, 47-40. It was a very strong showing. I don't think Milton Wolf will be – I don't know. I haven't talked to him lately, but I don't think he'll be running this time around. To some extent, the Tea Party guys, you know, sort of 2014 was the peak year, I think, for a lot of the traditional just Tea Party before Trump. And so he may not have the momentum. Sometimes, you know, there's a time. There's a time and you either win or you don't, and that time comes and gone has gone. In that case, I think probably for Milton. So, but the interesting thing about Kobach is he was considered to be the initial Secretary of Homeland Security, and President Trump chose John Kelly instead. Turns out John Kelly was not really down with the president's agenda.
So he promoted him to his chief of staff.
And then he's not really down with the president's agenda there. He's I think when he left, President Trump said, don't let the door hit you on the behind on your way out, right? And then his protege, Kirstjen Nielsen, just fired at Homeland Security. Part of the Trump administration problem has been identifying cabinet members and sub-cabinet members who actually embrace the Trump agenda and will execute it. Now, Kobach would be a fantastic pick for Homeland Security, and yet there are concerns that the same Mitch McConnell is not going to lead the confirmation battle for him. It's just kind of hard to figure.
Well, the same way that you've seen the president pick Herman Cain to go onto the Federal Reserve Board, and you've got already four U.S. senators, Republican senators, saying, I won't vote for him. So they're going to have to apparently pull that nomination because Republican senators won't back the president. Here you have Mitch McConnell again telling them, run away from the president.
So it's Mitt Romney was one of the four that won't vote for Herman Cain for Federal Reserve Board. He has a business career. He was on the regional Federal Reserve Bank Board for a number of years before. Now, he does have a little bit of a problem. You know, there were allegations of inappropriate conduct that knocked him out of the 2012 presidential campaign. And those allegations are what the Republican opponents to Herman Cain are bringing up. I think
while the Democrats are looking at nominating Joe Biden to be their candidate for president.
I know. But you're looking at different standards, right, for the Republicans versus Democrats.
Yeah, you can't spell hypocrisy without a subtext of Democrat.
Yes, I think that's exactly the point. Nonetheless, it is a weakness of Herman Cain. He would have to overcome that objection. And so the real objection is that he's Herman Cain conservative.
Well, that's the same reason that some of the Republicans are a little skittish of Stephen Moore, who's also been nominated by the president. You can't question his intellect. You can't question his knowledge. You can't question his character and integrity. And yet Republicans, for the same reason, he's a conservative.
Well, it's because he's a classical conservative, and they want more of a Keynesian in the Federal Reserve who, you know, they want to control the spigot of the flow of funds through the interest rate and kind of do all that manipulation, which is kind of not working out so well historically, right? But and so he has a different view on that. They don't want that view on, even if I think you're probably right. It looks like the Cain nomination will be withdrawn. That'd be my guess, right? Because who needs another battle? And I suppose the president should have thought about that before he nominated Herman Cain.
Well, that's been one of the criticisms that they didn't vet him before the president announced him. And I think that had they made the case privately to the president, this is a bad choice because of X, Y, and Z, he wouldn't have nominated him. But again, Trump, you know, kind of goes ahead with what he wants to do.
He's just a going forward kind of guy. In other words, he acts often and sometimes doesn't think through all the consequences. I think that's probably a fair comment. And in this particular case, if he had called Steve Gill or Mike Leahy, we would have said about the Kane nomination, you know, this is pretty inevitable that these 2012 allegations will come up again. Why do you need that, you know, knock on the head right now? Steve Moore, on the other hand, there are no allegations of impropriety. They just don't like his economic philosophy, which is aligned, exactly aligned with the Trump philosophy.
You know, and when you look at the advisors that advised President Trump, maybe they didn't want to bring it up and say, look, when you've got your grab them comments out there, when you've got your own allegations of misconduct, that it's just going to let you be a punching bag if you put Herman Cain up there.
Right.
And he's not going to get through anyway. So don't take the hit if you're not going to get the win. Where's that advice for the president?
Well, it's not there. I mean, it's not there. And
this is not hard stuff.
Yeah, but I know, Steve, if you were there, if out of the blue the president said, Steve, come and be my political advisor, right? And you were there in the White House. The odds are that he might just make that announcement without talking to you, right?
Yeah, just go ahead and do what he was doing.
Isn't that – I mean, I think that's his style, you know, that works in the private sector. And I'm not saying it doesn't work. He's accomplished a lot, much more than really in many cases, even than President Reagan did in the first period of time. But he's got an unusual go forward, let the chips fall where they may style. And I think kind of listening to wise advisors a little bit more wouldn't hurt him.
And getting some advisors around him who are actually advising him from his worldview.
Well, that's the other problem.
The rhinos and the anti-Trumpers. Yeah.
The people he listens to, he doesn't listen to that much. Trump guys. Part of it is the fact that his daughter Ivanka and her husband Jared, Jivanka, they're not really down with the Trump agenda.
The list of those who oppose his agenda start inside the family.
Yeah.
We're going to talk more in a moment as you look at Senate seats that could swing. I mean, Doug Jones, Alabama, Democrat, Republicans should pick that one up. But do you lose Susan Collins in Maine? Do you lose another Republican?
Yeah.
Do you net gain or net lose? Is Mitch McConnell right to say, oh, run away from the president, that's your best shot? Man, I'm not seeing it based on the track record, but we'll break it down a little bit more when we come back for more of the Battleground State Report.
It's the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellen.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. As always, go to BattlegroundStateNews.com. That's BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web. You can go to Battleground State News on Facebook throughout each and every week. We're here on the weekends, but you can check throughout the course of the week and find links to the stories that we'll cover at best we can in the limited time we have on the weekends. Mitch McConnell is advising Republican U.S. Senate candidates in the 2020 elections to run away from President Trump, to run their own campaigns, focusing on their own states. I mean, I'm sure he's looking at some polling that indicates that some of his senators may be in trouble. Michael, do you think they're in trouble because of their link to President Trump, or do you think they're in trouble because they haven't repealed and replaced Obamacare like they promised to do so?
Yeah.
They haven't secured the border like they promised to do so. They haven't built a fence like they promised to do so, or a wall. They haven't done what they promised. Their problem, I don't think, is President Trump. Their problem is them.
I think you're exactly right on that.
If they're going to run away from something, they're going to have to run away from their own records.
So what's interesting is if you look at some of these races that are up, even in a battleground state, you mentioned Maine. Let's talk about Maine for a while. Susan Collins. Now, she is not at the top of the list of people supporting the Trump agenda. However, she gave the ultimately persuasive speech in putting the Kavanaugh confirmation over the top. It was really an extraordinarily well-delivered, well-thought-out speech. And she made a difference in favor of the Trump agenda.
And I guess she's concerned that may hurt her in a less than conservative Maine, although Brett Kavanaugh ought to be thrilling them. He's become much more like a Justice Roberts than like a Gorsuch.
Yeah, he's not a Gorsuch so far. Maybe early. We'll see. You know, I'm not. Some conservatives are worried about that. I'm not all that worried about that. Just because you know, I was thinking about this, Steve, and tell me what you think. If you're Brett Kavanaugh and you've just been through this.
Hold on. Can you get me a beer? Okay. I need two beers here.
Okay. So now, Brett Kavanaugh, I'm going to have me a beer. That's a real deal guy.
Yeah, he likes beer.
Elizabeth Warren, I think I'm going to have me a beer. That's a phony deal, right? But let's go back.
She didn't even hold – I mean, we're talking about the clip of Elizabeth Warren in the middle of her announcement says, I'm going to get me a beer. Didn't even hold it like somebody who's ever had a beer before.
Oh, yeah. We'll get back to Elizabeth Warren, the fake Native American, in a bit. But let's talk about Brett Kavanaugh. I was thinking about this because there have been a lot of reports about, you know, Kavanaugh being too much like John Roberts. And let's think about if you are Brett Kavanaugh. And you know right now that there are – the House of Representatives is there are people there who are putting forward the idea of impeaching you, right? Now, where that will turn out, it seems not likely to have much of a future. But nonetheless, there's that out there. Is he being this strategic? Is he in his first year saying, look, I'm here on the Supreme Court. I don't necessarily want to throw my best punches in my first year. I want to kind of hold it, let the whole controversy die down. I'm going to look at these cases and present myself as someone who's not quite the originalist in the Scalia mode, and I'm just going to kind of hold my fire on some of these
cases.
It's
a lifetime appointment. They can't remove him.
Well, yes, but. Yes, but I see what you're saying. I mean, but is he looking at a strategy to say, I am not going to come out and be my full conservative self in the first couple years? I'm going to wait this out and have a long-run view. Or am I just being too generous to Kavanaugh?
I think you're being too generous. I think Neil Gorsuch hasn't worried one moment to side with the conservatives on the court. And actually – the year that they overlapped between Gorsuch and his former mentor when he clerked for Justice Kennedy, Kennedy moved more to the right with the leadership of Gorsuch. And yet you've got Roberts pulling Kavanaugh to the left or to his moderate view.
I think that would be the consensus of you right now.
I mean, if Kavanaugh was more conservative, maybe he'd pull Roberts more with him.
You got to remember that Roberts, now he's 64 years old. He's been the Chief Justice now for what, I think 12 years? So he's kind of the more experienced guy up there now. Kavanaugh, 54, the new kid on the block. Gorsuch does not have the same public perception problem that Kavanaugh has. There are no allegations of improper conduct against Gorsuch. I guess maybe I am giving him the benefit of the doubt, right? Or maybe I'm saying – maybe actually this is wishful thinking on my part.
Well, I mean, you know, the only thing that Kavanaugh could be subjected to would be he's not going to get glowing editorials and commentaries in the Washington Post. He's not going to get the embrace when he goes to the liberal salons and cocktail parties in Washington, D.C. He wants to be liked by the left more than he wants to do what constitutionalist conservative
maybe
views would carry forward.
It's hard to say looking from the outside. Certainly you look at John Roberts and his track record, and I think that characterization, if you look at the body of his work, particularly the just horrific NFIB v. Sebelius decision where he made up law for the House of Representatives and Congress in order to not declare Obamacare unconstitutional. One of the worst decisions in the Supreme Court history, at least in modern Supreme Court history. I think that kind of triangulation towards the left to get the huzzas and applause, that's a fair criticism of John Roberts. I would just say I'm going to give Kavanaugh benefit of the doubt for another couple sessions before I come to that conclusion. But, you know, you are right. Take a look at the ones that have gone left in the past. John Paul Stevens, nominated by Ford.
Suter,
nominated by George H.W. Bush. How long before we realized that they were fully kind of lefties? It was not necessarily immediately. It took a session or two.
Well, you don't see people move right when they get to Washington, whether they're elected to Congress, whether they're elected to the U.S. Senate, whether they're named to a federal judgeship or a Supreme Court position. You don't see people move to the right because there is that media and social and just the pounding that people take that pulls them to the left, pulls them to the center. So if you want somebody to be a conservative in Washington, you better pick somebody who's solidly there and know they're going to get from watered down at least 10% after they get there. Now, there's some exceptions.
Yeah.
Dan Crenshaw, Mark Green, Marsha Blackburn. You're not seeing them move to the left at this point, but you look at others before them that you thought would be conservatives – And they've moved slowly to the left.
It's a very good point. Now, back to Brett Kavanaugh. So you just mentioned Dan Crenshaw, Mark Green, Marsha Blackburn. They have something in common. They weren't born and raised in the Washington, D.C. area. Brett Kavanaugh was. And so
it's one of the reasons I love the idea of Amy Barrett Coney, who's from Indiana, from flyover country, didn't go to Yale or
Went to
Harvard.
Rhodes College in Memphis.
Yeah, she'd be a great Supreme Court pick, and I think President Trump has even indicated she's his first pick off the bench to go to the bench.
Yeah, so I think that when you try to do the psychology of first-term Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, there may be some of that. There may be some of that in terms of too much of a Washington-centric view. The other thing about Kavanaugh is I do think he's been stung personally, not only by the whole travesty of the Blasey Ford false, uncorroborated allegations of misconduct, 35 years ago. He was a guest faculty member at Harvard, no longer. And now he's a visiting professor at George Mason University in the D.C. area. Students are protesting him. Yeah, so, there may be a little bit of a thin skin.
He needs
a
little thicker skin.
That's probably it. He needs a thicker skin. And now you say that, having withstood all of this avalanche of just character assassination across the country. I mean, that was rough stuff.
And the reason this matters in the battleground states is because one of the reasons that President Trump got elected was because conservatives, evangelical Christians, and others adamantly wanted him to pick Supreme Court justices that would be Christian, constitutionalist, conservative members of the court rather than the left-wing stuff we had gotten out of President Obama. That was a key factor in particular in evangelical Christians getting enthused and supporting President Trump. And if his picks fall short, that may diminish that enthusiasm and could cost him the White House. Again, he may not have another pick to make before election time 2020, but that diminishes
Justice Kavanaugh. If you're listening, step up your game, brother.
Yeah, if you want Amy Coney Barrett to join you on the bench, you better start acting like you belong on the bench. This is the Battleground State Report, battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy here with you. As always, go to battlegroundstatenews.com, battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, Battleground State News on Facebook, where you'll find links to some of the stories that we're talking about. Now, we'll often get into policy, not just the politics of the battleground states. And I want to touch on that for just a moment as we have another blast of blizzard throughout the Midwest as global warming rears its ugly head again. The same scientists that are telling us that we only have 12 years to live, Ocasio-Cortez, et cetera, they're experts. 20 years ago, they were telling us that, Washington, D.C. and New York City would be awash in seawater because of the melting poles. And that didn't happen. The melting glaciers didn't happen. So the same folks that keep trying to tell us that their science is accurate are the same scientists that can't, predict what's going to happen in 2 weeks, much less in 20 years.
So you want to hear something funny? So John Fraud Kerry, Rush calls him John Fraud, John Forbes Kerry. Who was crushed in the 2004 presidential election, former senator from Massachusetts, Democrat, by President George W. Bush, and who became the Secretary of State for President Obama after Hillary Clinton went to run unsuccessfully for president. I love saying that.
Unsuccessfully.
Unsuccessfully. Love saying that. So he apparently is toying with the idea of running for president again. I know you're dying to hear that.
Because Massachusetts candidates, you know, Dukakis, Warren, Kerry have done so well in the past.
They do so well. So he went to a hearing. He testified in a hearing recently in the House about climate change. And, you know, in Kentucky, there's this really smart member of Congress, Thomas Massie, right? You know, MIT guy. I think he's got like a PhD in molecular science.
He's smart.
He's a smart guy.
And then you've got John Kerry.
Yeah. So it was interesting.
Wasn't John Kerry the one that threw a hand grenade into rice and got a Purple Heart because rice blew in, you know, into his buttocks?
Derriere.
Yeah, that was his Purple Heart.
Yeah, and he did serve in Vietnam 6 months, and the rice blew him out apparently.
Yeah, got a Purple Heart for rice up his rear end.
Anyway, so John,
that's actual rice, the food product, not some guy named Rice.
I mean, okay. So anyways, he was testifying about global warming and how it's obviously here, and we only – I don't know if he went to the full 12 years only left to live type thing that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is. But he was pontificating about how, you know, a consensus of scientists say we must face global warming, and it's all man-made, and it's destroying the earth, and it'll all collapse in just a matter of years unless we act immediately. So that was his deal. So Massie, the guy with the PhD like in molecular science from MIT, the Republican from Kentucky, says, obviously you have a degree in science from Yale. Isn't that right? So that's why you're an expert on this? Tongue in cheek, of course, Steve. To which Kerry said, well, I actually have a degree in political science. And so, okay. So, well, can you cite the science that supports your contention that all of this global warming is man-made? Kerry goes, hubbada, hubbada, hubbada. It was hilarious.
Yeah, seriously, I've been talking about this forever.
Yeah, and, well, actually,
inaccurate forever.
That's exactly you are just, you know, feeling what they would say. That's exactly what he said. He said, are you seriously questioning me? And he said, well, you're the scientist.
Yeah, give me the scientific basis. By the way, my lack of trust about scientists,
yeah,
not just the global warming kind, is that when you see some of the scientific experiments they decide to engage in, I know this is a little bit of field of where we usually go, but did you see the story where scientists in China are planning to put human genes into monkeys to make them smarter? Well, Has nobody ever watched Planet of the Apes?
I mean, really? Hello? We don't need smarter monkeys with genetics. Yeah. Did they watch?
Could we genetically improve the quality of the intellect of Democrats? That would be a scientific experiment. I would be willing to.
I don't think that would succeed at all.
It's like the same scientists that want to take DNA from dinosaur bones and see if they can bring dinosaurs back. It's like Jurassic Park. Anybody?
There's one creator, guys, and you're not it. As that famous Jeff Goldblum character in Jurassic Park said, nature finds a way. And I think putting trying to use DNA genetic changes to make monkeys smarter, what could go wrong with that?
Well, and some good news on the non-science but economic side. Again, lowest unemployment rates in 50 years, lowest jobless claims in 50 years. Fewest jobless claims in America since 1969. And you wonder why people are gravitating towards President Trump. You wonder why his approval ratings are going up. People are feeling the benefits of the tax cuts and the job growth and the wage growth. And the Democrats aren't addressing that. They're wanting us to go down the path of destructive socialism. They're wanting to talk about how 9/11 and the terror attack was just some people did something. They are so off message. And they are rushing to be further left than all the other candidates and moving themselves further and further from moderates, independents, conservatives, blue-collar Reagan Democrats in the battleground states. Do you see any sign that anybody on the left, on the Democratic side, is waking up to that reality.
No, not at all, because they all want to get the presidential nomination. And they know that the far-left loonies are the ones that are active and that will vote.
Even in a divided primary, you would think somebody would say, well, I think the path may be via moderation. Now, maybe that was what Joe Biden was going to try to do, but even he's having to move left to cater to the whack jobs. And
he's
his,
got
you know,
his
sniffing
own,
and groping problems.
He's got his you know, behavioral problems out there, which will not go away. And they're going to hit him over the head with that with like a bludgeon for the next year and a half, which may explain why he's not yet announced. Maybe he wants to get those, I don't know. How much does he get for a speech now?
Oh, I'm sure he's in the 100 grand at least.
At least. He probably wants to get more of those 100 grand fees coming in, right, until he makes an announcement. Now, the word on the street is he's apparently going to announce at some point, but it's April. And how long can he wait? I suppose now let's go back maybe and look.
He starts with name recognition that others have to buy.
Yeah. And, well, now, interestingly enough, in one of our battleground states, a recent poll by St. Anselm College, which is a college up there that's very – has a political center.
New Hampshire.
Yeah, New Hampshire. Yep. They did a poll in New Hampshire and of Democratic primary voters. It's the first primary in the nation. I think it'll be February this year. And it does start the path, shall we say, towards the nomination. So in the top – and by the way, you know who lives just south of New Hampshire? Senator Elizabeth Warren lives just south of New Hampshire. So they do this poll, and it's just recent. So in first place among Democratic primary voters with 23% of the vote, Joe Biden. Creepy Joe. Apparently it doesn't bug too many people up there that he's Creepy Joe. then Bernie Sanders, who's from neighboring Vermont, just neighbors to the west, 16%. In third place, not neighboring Elizabeth Warren, but instead with about 11% of the vote, Mayor Pete Buttigieg. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, the thing is, though, that all these guys, they get their moment in the spotlight. They rise and then they fall. I mean, Beto was the big thing just a month or so ago, and now he's drawing crowds of
three,
dozens.
Four, dozens. You know? Yep. That's but in fourth place, it's like 8.5%. Elizabeth Warren from neighboring Massachusetts. Now, what does this tell me? It tells me the following, that New Hampshire Democratic, likely New Hampshire Democratic primary voters like the authentic gay guy, the authentic gay white guy, more than they like the fake Native American.
And yet he's going to, you know, push aside the moderate blue-collar Reagan Democrats by making his gayness the end-all be-all of his entire campaign. And
it's all
– I was talking to somebody yesterday. Yeah. You can't watch a show on ABC anymore.
Oh.
That's Disney-owned and ESPN-owned. I mean, they're all in that same –
It's all gay.
Every single show has three or four – by gosh, this isn't really gay, part of the storyline, but we've got to have two guys kissing.
Yeah. It's got to have the gay guys.
They throw it in your face constantly. And if you – I guess if you watch ABC, you'd think 30-40% of the population is gay.
It's what, like a couple percent?
Maybe 1 or 2%?
Yeah. I mean, that's what the polls – so anyways, it's the Democratic – victimhood philosophy, right? And the biggest victim is the one you need to vote for. And so he's a victim, he says, because he's gay and married to a guy. And, you know, the victims, I think, are probably from the report in, I guess it was The Atlantic. It's the residents of the city. He's a mayor of South Bend, Indiana. Yeah. But again, it's all about his only message is I'm as far left as these other lunatic Democratic presidential candidates. But in addition to that, I'm the gay guy, he says. Okay. And it's all about gay, 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 gay. What else? And he does this straw man argument against Mike Pence. He claims Mike Pence has a problem with him being gay. No.
Mike Pence has never even brought it up.
Not even brought it up. Now, what's the criticism of Mike Pence? Well, Mike Pence is for marriage between a man and a woman. He's certainly got the right to do that because he's that doesn't mean he's against this guy being gay. Now, I will say this about Pete Buttigieg. He does know how to frame a phrase, right? And it was a clever phrase to say, Vice President Pence, your problem is not with me. your problem is with my creator. That was his phrase.
Right. It's not my choice to be gay.
Yeah. Now, that's a good phrase, whether it's true or not. But it's a good phrase, but it's obviously a false argument. You cannot build your campaign, well, maybe if you're a Democrat, you can, on a false argument that's ultimately false. One thing that, we'll see, it's sort of a Mayor Pete boomlet, right?
And again, you're going to see these rise and fall, and then you're going to see people get their second turn in the spotlight. You're going to have the flavor of the week for the next 30 or 40 weeks before it kind of gets honed down, before people run out of money, realize that they really can't run a legitimate campaign, and you're going to see these people start to fall off.
So let's talk about Elizabeth Warren. So there she is, right? She's been running hard for president ever since she told the voters of Massachusetts about a year ago she wouldn't run for president. She's been running hard for president. Not going so well for Elizabeth. She continues to stick with her fake Native American claims. She totally did a debacle on the DNA test that she took that showed she doesn't have any DNA in common with Native American tribes in the United States, but has DNA in common with like 0.1% of her DNA is in common with residents of Peru, Mexico, and Colombia. She's also not particularly likable. She hasn't been raising money. She only raised about $6 million in the first quarter, which is the same as Amy Klobuchar did. So
and
not
any
going
of these
well.
Folks that are running nationally, their burn rate of spending through may be faster than what they're raising unless they've got big bucks of hard money coming in. Hey, you have a great rest of the week. In the meantime, go to BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web, BattlegroundStateNews.com. Go to Battleground State News on Facebook. And we'll, of course, be back next weekend, same time, to share what's gone on. And, again, it's going to be another busy, crazy week. You have a great week.